I was asked by the organizers to talk about a topic which I didn't really expect to. I brought a stack of transparencies about various topics I thought I might talk about, but this was not included in this because this is rather old work done with Ole Gunnarsson in 1983. And I just saw Jim Allen running along, and he might as well give this talk because he and his group, for example, was one of the experimental groups to use this method in detail. And he even has written a theoretical paper where he tried to simplify various things. Why should I talk about it? With this DMFT business, in a way, it would be nice if we had a very simple way of solving the Anderson impurity problem. But unfortunately, there is no super duper way of doing it. And so I will talk about the method we proposed in 1982 and 83. Let me just make a few remarks. Ole Gunnarsson and I were both postdoc with Bob Schrieffer in 1976 and 77. We shared an office, and we wanted to write papers with the Nobel Prize winner, but he was barely there. So after a couple of months, we decided to work together. And this was then a very nice collaboration, which there was an intensive collaboration for almost 10 years with about 50 papers we wrote in that time. And we are still writing one paper every 3 years together. So collaboration really goes on. At that time, Bob Schrieffer was interested in surface physics, so we did something in surface physics, and we were calculating core-level spectra, especially if you have an adsorbate and you make a core level, you pull a valence level below the Fermi energy, and this gives you some high-energy structure in your core-level spectra. You don't just have the Nozier de Dominici's singularity, but you have a high-energy feature, which was first discussed by Combescot and Nozier in the early 70s. But if you make really this an Anderson impurity model so that you really include spin in the model, then when you pull it below the Fermi level, you have to make sure that it's only singly occupied. So this type of problem was interesting us in the early 80s, and then vaguely 1 over NF ideas came around. Ours was 82, 83. I should mention that there were then two other approaches at about the same time, a bit later. One was by Kuramoto, I think it was 83 also. If you ask Helmut Keiter, he did it already 10 years earlier. So let's call it Keiter-Kimball. And then there was Piers Coleman. And all of that is then later called the NCA. And this is a finite temperature approach, while ours is a T equals zero theory. Okay, I said I didn't bring the transparencies, so I've now two transparencies. For the rest, I will essentially use the blackboard, try to get the main ideas, and then refer to the heavy computing for the higher order calculation. So I just tried to give you a glimpse what the method is all about. You know, in that field, you have this famous Kondo peak, but if you look at even review articles by Glassman in Physics World, when he tries to explain the Kondo peak to laymen, it's rather difficult. And even when you know, feel you know what the Kondo peak is and read what he writes, it's a bit unclear, stays unclear. So let me start just with one transparency with Hamiltonians. So these are the main two. I essentially talk about this first paper, FizRef B23, 28. in 1983. We had a PRL before, and then the paper grew longer and longer, so we always only called it the monster, so this is our monster. And the double occupancy, so the finite U case, is discussed in more detail in this paper. So we take an F level, so we were talking about cerium compounds in this paper. So you have your Anderson impurity Hamiltonian, so we have the conduction band. We have the F level. Here for this discussion, I neglect about spin orbit coupling, crystal field splitting, magnetic fields, so I assume that the F level is degenerate. This is what was an important part of our work. We were not just interested, say, in valence photoemission or inverse photoemission, but we were interested in X-ray absorption and core level spectroscopy. So we also added a core level. So when you create a core hole, this F level is pulled down, which is important to describe the core level spectroscopy. I will not talk about core level spectroscopy this afternoon, so forget about it again. So then you have the typical Hopping term and the Coulomb interaction. And the main assumption, which kind of is important for this 1 over n expansion, is that this is the quantity which always enters when you do calculations. You have your Hopping matrix elements, and then you have to sum over them all with fixed energy. And the assumption is that this is diagonal in the magnetic quantum number m and m prime. So if this would be spherical harmonics, this is obvious. But this is the general assumption people make. So then of all the k states, essentially all you have to do is take some one-dimensional projection, so right over the k states with these Hopping matrix elements with this given m, and properly normalize it. And then in the end, you can forget about the k labels, but just have like one-dimensional subsystems. So you have the energy band labeled by energy, and nu now has the magnetic degeneracy and the spin degeneracy, which now no longer appears as very much different. So you have an n-fold degenerate system. So the F level is also, so it's n-fold degenerate. Then you have this simple Hopping. So each sub F level only couples to its own one-dimensional band, and then you have again this Coulomb repulsion on the impurity, and the rest of the bands which do not directly couple this way you can just forget. So this is the basic Hamiltonian you work with, and the main idea is now that this n is a large quantity. So if we have an F level, the degeneracy is now 7 times 2 is 14, and then 1 over nf is much smaller than 1. And while a straightforward perturbation theory in this hybridization is not controlled, it's helpful to have this additional small parameter. So the idea is to use a scaling that the V of epsilon scales like 1 over square root nf. So this is the main idea. Yes?
I'm a bit confused about the Hamiltonian here. The conduction electrons, the psi epsilon, right?
Yeah.
They also carry the large degeneracy index?
Yes. Each new couples to its own band.
Okay, so it's, you have some multi-channel conduction electrons.
Yeah, so if you would have just an electron gas, you would simply expand in spherical harmonics everything, the conduction band as well as the as your F. So then you only couple say the M couples to the corresponding spherical harmonic. Okay. Now, Why is that so? Also say in the MFT you have a special scaling which you have to think about how to get a proper large D limit. So here you have to make this type of a scaling. Now, as I said, what we want to do is now make a T equal zero theory. So we're interested in the ground state and properties in spectroscopies so for example XAS what do we have in XPS UPS inverse photoemission and so on probably not everyone has seen this Hamiltonian so I'll need to print the second transparency a bit later. Okay, so what we want to do, let's start with the ground state. So what we want to do is to make a variational calculation for the ground state, and I'm mainly concentrated on the condo limit. The calculation was done for arbitrary F-level position. So the situation we would have, say, a conduction band, put the energy zero here, and would have the F level, say, below the chemical potential, and then want to know what is the ground state. And say the first attempt you would make is that you simply start with that situation that you have this filled, and if the F level is below the Fermi level, you simply put one electron here, so this with a fixed mu. Okay, if you do that, then you would take, for example, this is a starting point, and then, for example, try simple perturbation theory. If you try simple perturbation theory, the first step is if you apply your Hamiltonian to that, this special electron will hop into the unoccupied part of the band, but with a hopping, which is this hopping here would be proportional to V, if this is an energy E, V of E, but as we said, we scale it like 1 over square root of NF, so this goes to 0 when NF goes to 0, so in a certain sense, these states are already eigenstates when you take this limit seriously. We have to be a bit more careful later. Let's call these the magnetic states. And then in this limit, you would have that the Hamiltonian applied to that state phi zero. Magnetic assay would simply be E0, the Fermi C plus the F level plus this magnetic state, the lowest order. So this is not what we really, what the ground state really is. The second attempt goes as follows. Actually, what you do, you start your perturbation calculation just with the Fermi C. And your F level empty. And now, if you apply your Hamiltonian to this state, what happens is that an electron can hop from within the band into the F level, but at that, and then you get a symmetric combination of states. So you would call this state zero. And then what we have when we bring in these electrons in here, so I would call the state epsilon, and this is a 1 over square root nf sum over all nu, and then the psi epsilon psi nu dagger psi epsilon nu on this Fermi C. So what we now have is that we have a sum over all these states here, And if we apply the Hamiltonian, we now, because of this sum, get the important result that the zero H epsilon equals NF square root NF times V epsilon. So, and this is of order one. And this simply comes because you have this additional sum over all states. So if you take that seriously, and in principle, so I didn't say much about U. Let me start now mainly the first part of the discussion that I take an infinite U, so we have no double occupancy. But a proper description of the experimental data, it was later important to include that. Okay. So now we have our ground state as the form to leading order. That's phi zero is some normalization constant. The normalized state is this Fermi C plus an integral, some A of epsilon d epsilon plus zero of order one over square root of f. So if we take the limit nf seriously, then we get the exact ground state as a superposition of this state and this state. And because certainly you will try to have your holes as close as possible up here so that you really gain this energy epsilon f, you can easily convince yourself that the ground state energy E0 is given again by the Fermi C plus the epsilon f, and then an energy lowering delta, which I'll come to later. So it's easy to see that this, in fact, is leads to a lower ground state energy. Okay, now I'll need this constant A in a moment. So we said the state should be normalized. And if we take all the coefficients real, we get that this is A squared times 1 integral A squared of epsilon the epsilon. And if we want to know what the F occupancy is, NF, ground state expectation value of the F operator, then certainly in all these states you have NF equal 1 because there's one electron sitting here. So then the only the second part stays there. So we have this integral A squared of epsilon the epsilon. And if you subtract that, you get the 1 minus NF equals A squared, which I need shortly.
So could you assume that all states are orthogonal?
Yeah, the states are, it's easy to see that the states are orthogonal. This is all
F and also.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm working all the time later also with many body basis states, mm-hmm. which are all orthogonal.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the main idea is that, say, going from here to here, because the nu is fixed, only this one can go out, and this gives you a factor 1 over nf. While if the electron jumps here, it can come from any place, and this gives you this additional factor. Okay, so let me show this for the ground state. Again, and this the transparency. So at the moment, I only looked at these two types of many-body basis states, the Fermi C and the singly occupied state. If you allow for double occupancy, then again, this extra nu can come from, again, apart from one an arbitrary. So again, this gives the hopping times the degeneracy gives you order one process. So these full arrows are order one processes. While now, if you look to higher order, what can happen if you apply perturbation theory? For example, you can have this one hop out. So this one would hop out, but this is a fixed nu, so this is a 1 over square root of n f contribution. And then once you have that, they're of the same order, these filling from arbitrary channels. And again, if you start, say, have this hopping out, again, this gives you a square root 1 over n f factor. So these are same order in 1 over n f, and the next order, and so on. So this is the classification of these states how they couple in higher and higher order in 1 over n f. So this is the basic idea of the method. Okay, so this is the ground state. I'll calculate the delta and the A of epsilon in a moment. Before I do that, I will tell you how do we do spectroscopies. Say, in a spectral function or in spectroscopy, we would have some function, let me call it G of C. Okay, you have the ground state, and then some operator, transition operator, and then you take a resolvent, ground state energy plus the Hamiltonian, or maybe the opposite sign, depending on what you have. So these are the type of functions you want to calculate. For example, if you want to look at the valence photo emission, you would have simply an annihilation operator for inverse photo emission and creation operator at this point here. And now, again, very similar to the transparency I just had with these rows of states, now we take some intermediates, complete or almost complete intermediate many body states, to a given order in 1 over nf. So first row, second row. Again, say, for example, if I would do photo emission, then I would have to have states which have one electron less, or inverse photo emission, one electron more. So it's a very similar picture as the one I had here for these intermediate states. So we assume that these states are roughly complete, and then you simply have to insert the complete states here. So you have an I and J, phi 0, T dagger I, 1 over C minus epsilon 0 N plus H, J, T, phi 0. And the way then to calculate this, this resolvent is simply you calculate the matrix elements, C minus H0, N plus H, J, matrix element, and then matrix inversion. And if you want to go to higher orders in 1 over nf, then certainly this is a rather involved numerics. But I want to tell you or show you that one can really understand the Kondo peak quite easily if you do a rather low order calculation. So as an example, I will start with the inverse photo emission, or Brennstrahlung isochromat spectroscopy, and do it really to the absolute leading order. Okay, so example, inverse photo emission. So then we have this G bigger nu of C, defined as phi 0, phi nu 1 over C minus, now and the sign is a plus here, minus H, psi nu dagger phi 0. So this is the quantity you want to calculate, and the spectral function you could later take the imaginary part in approaching the real axis. Okay, so now we make the leading order. Then we have to take as the ground state phi 0, the one which I had over there, A times 0 integral A of epsilon the epsilon. And if we apply a creation operator to the state, we see the first term gives essentially what I had here as the magnetic states, Fermi C and one special term in here, while the second term would give a double occupied part, so that would have a spectral weight which is gone to infinity if I take the infinite U limit first. So, and then we see the leading order in nu, in F, this is already an eigenstate with that energy. Okay, so what we get is that this is an eigenstate. So I simply put the energy here, and the ground state energy was just the same, but with this delta here. So what we get is that the G0 nu for NF goes to infinity is simply given, and this is the Fermi C, and this just gives a 1. So it gives me an A squared times Z minus delta, and then the phi 0 psi nu dagger phi 0. This is 1. This is 1 minus nf. So we get a 1 minus nf times Z minus delta. So what we get a peak, a single peak, at energy delta, will turn out that this is the Condor peak. This is the Condor peak if we are in the limit that the F level is below the Fermi energy. If the F level is very high above the Fermi energy, this is simply will turn out to be just the F level position. The empty level case is trivial. So we should rather have calculated the delta to see that in this Condor limit, this is really an exponentially small quantity. So?
Okay. So to that order, to the leading order, the Condor peak is just a delta function.
Yeah. I'll show that, say, take the case of non-interacting, it have the U equals 0, and then, say, put the level high above. Then it's clear that you know that the level width is simply given by v squared.
That's right.
But we have scaled this to be 1 over n. So it's 1 over square root of n. So this width is 0. Later turn out that the width of the Condor peak is delta divided by nf. Next order calculation gives that. OK, so what we want to do is to calculate this delta. Calculation is quite simple. So delta in this leading order, we have h phi 0 equals epsilon 0, 0 plus epsilon f minus delta phi 0. So all we have to do is multiply it by 0 and multiply it by epsilon. And then if I multiply it by 0, I get here an epsilon. So this first, epsilon 0, 0, 0, phi 0. Then from the term with the epsilon, I get an integral 0 v of epsilon. Oh, I put the v, sorry. V epsilon phi 0 v epsilon equals 0 phi 0, and then the energy as it's here. Epsilon 0 plus epsilon f minus delta. OK, so this is a of epsilon times a. This drops out. This term drops out with this term. So what we get is an integral from minus b to 0 square root nf v of epsilon a of epsilon d the epsilon equals epsilon f minus delta. And the other calculation is you multiply it with epsilon, you get an epsilon 0, 0 plus epsilon f minus epsilon times a of epsilon plus square root nf v of epsilon equals epsilon 0, 0 plus epsilon f minus delta. And then again, this a of epsilon. Now you can combine the two and get this the a of epsilon equals square root nf v divided by epsilon minus delta, which tells you where the holes come from in this ground state. We'll see shortly that in the Kondo limit, this delta is exponentially small, so we get practically all the holes in this ground state from very near the Fermi level. Now, all we have to do is to plug this in here, and this gives a transcendental equation, and the transcendental equation is just integral from 0 to b, nf v squared of epsilon divided by epsilon minus delta, the epsilon is epsilon f minus delta. So this is the transcendental equation, which to this leading order in the 1 over nf expansion gives you the ground state.
Integral is minus b to 0.
Minus b to 0, sorry. And so this type of function would be the real type of real part of gamma, which always pops up even in the non-attracting Anderson impurity model. But the main difference is now that it doesn't extend to the whole part of the band, but just the occupied part of the band. And this cutoff is responsible for this exponential energy dependence of the, what do I need next? I probably don't need this anymore. Okay, so it's easy to, if we now assume that the V of epsilon is constant, also assume that the B is much larger than the delta, which is what we have most of the time, then we'll see that in the Kondo limit, if we sort of take the Kondo limit, which means also that the NF delta that the EF is very much larger than the NF times delta, and this delta is pi times V squared, then this will turn out to be very small. So in this transcendental equation to a first approximation, we can simply drop it and do the integral. And doing this integral is not trivial because this just gives a logarithm. So we get nf delta divided by pi log delta over b equals epsilon f minus delta. I said we drop this here. And this ends up with delta equals bandwidth times e to the minus epsilon f, absolute value pi divided by nf times delta. So this is in this approximate the Kondo energy, Kondo, or the Kondo temperature, if you multiply it by Boltzmann constant. And you see this is the width, the one particle width of the thing. It goes like 1 over v squared. And again, we have this combination, which in the limit nf going to infinity wanted to have a constant. So this, doing this if you do the calculation and just look at this as a perturbation theory in V, you would see if you stop some for that reason here that a good thing to do is to have a scale that this goes to a constant in the infinite NF limit. Okay, so what we find is then the NF, this 1 minus NF itself turns out to be given by delta divided by nf times delta. So the weight of this Condor peak is very small. But what you especially see that if you're in this Condor limit, this peak is just the Condor temperature above the Fermi level. So your spectral function in this crudest approximation, where you might have your F level here, give you a rho function of epsilon, but here's your delta. So what you get, if you do the calculation on the right-hand side, so this is your Condor peak. Okay, now comes a problem which I don't really want to hide, which is also plagues the NCA, is that if you look at your spectral weight here we see the spectral weight of the inverse photo emission part is proportional to 1 for each subchannel. But the weight in the photo emission part will be 1 over the degeneracy. So we'll have a problem to get a complete theory or a complete 1 over nf expansion for the total spectral function, but we really have to do it separately for the inverse photoemission and the photoemission part. So the problem is, I wanted to tell the problem a bit later. Okay, let me first just look at my notes. So we have, I've done here. So now this is the rho bigger. Now I want to have the rho smaller. So look at the photoemission part. G nu smaller of z equals phi 0 psi nu dagger, 1 over z minus epsilon 0 of n plus h psi nu phi 0. So we have to look what happens. So if we look at the ground state and want to take out the F electron, so we pick up this A part here, this part here, so we take out the electron here. So then this electron is gone. But then from this transparency I had, it's clear that we can apply the Hopping term again, and then it can be filled with an arbitrary label. So there will be a process of same order which we have to take into account. So apart from this one, which we automatically get, say this one and this empty, from applying it here, it's clear that we also have to take into account a process where another electron, epsilon prime, epsilon, goes in here and fills it again. And so this label can then again be arbitrary. So they are of the same order. So in that sense of inserting these intermediate states here and there, we have to take them both. Turns out that with these two types of states, the matrix inversion at that order of the theory can still be done analytically, but would probably take too much time to do that. Say that we have an analytical calculation. And what we get in the Condor limit is that we have essentially, I put it, draw it separately, so to kind of, what we get is, if this is the F level position, we essentially get the atomic peak in the Condor limit, which has a width nf times delta. And then we get a quick rise of spectral weight close to the Fermi level. And this rise can be given analytically. It goes like 1 over epsilon minus delta squared times V squared of epsilon. So what you get from this calculation is this, the atomic peak, and this here is the onset of the Kondo peak. Okay, so then you have to smoothly connect this with this calculation for the photo emission part. You have to do a higher order calculation for the inverse photo emission part. So then we said we had this peak delta here, and what you have to do is to do, let's say, a next higher order calculation in 1 over nf for the inverse photo emission part, and then turns out that the width is proportional to delta divided by nf.
Good.
Yeah.
Just before we go to the next order, let me just understand the first order thing. So the negative frequency part overall has a spectral weight of order nf, right?
And for nf, in each channel, only nf over nf. So if it depends on if you to take, because you have to sum over all channels and integrate up to the Fermi energy to get the occupancy. So the each individual channel has an occupancy nf divided by the degeneracy.
Okay, in your notation, nf.
NF is this is total occupancy. Let's take 0.8.
No, it's the total occupancy summed over.
Sum over, right. Yeah. So the NF sum over nu.
Right. So the negative, the spectral weight in the negative part is NF over N.
Yes.
NF over N. And the width of the Hubbard band, of the lower Hubbard band, is of order one, correct? Is of order the
Yeah. And this is also easy to understand why this has this factor NF here. If you are in the atomic situation and you take out this electron, then this state can be filled by one of the NF electrons tunneling in. So you have N different NF different tunneling processes, which kind of makes this factor here.
So to lowest order, we have that on the negative side.
Yes.
And on the positive side, we have a delta function.
Yes. If you take, you really take NF strictly to infinity.
Yes.
If not, it's obvious that even, say, if you take the empty level situation where the epsilon F is high above, then you just do a calculation where you forget about a correlation and you simply get a peak which is perhaps with delta. And delta, we said, is 1 over F, so this is gone. And the essential part is that if you look at this width, what you get is essentially a 1 minus NF times this delta, which comes. So there's another factor 1 minus NF, which determines the width of the.
Now you are describing the next order.
And I'm describing next order, which still can be done analytically. Calculation is a bit longer, but I still analytically can see what the weights and the width of the peaks are.
And to next order, one has to include new basis states.
New basis states, for example, where from these magnetic states, for example, really hop out, and then once it's gone, you again have to allow for the next states, which where it can come from everywhere.
But there's a finite number.
It's always say it's essentially two in this figure which I had here. So it's always like two which come if you take the u equal to infinity.
And then this Kondo peak is a pure Lorentzian.
Then this Kondo peak is in the middle, is a pure Lorentzian, and then there come some finite, very small problems, say in the Fermi liquid regime. This is the problem where the NCA also has some problems that you don't really get a smooth. So you get some nasty things right at the chemical potential.
Positive omega and negative omega do not really match.
Because you have to take these two different types of orders, and there's a slight mismatch.
So you are saying, okay, I do the positive omega calculation to next order, and I get the broadening.
Yeah.
And then I have to do again the negative omega calculation to the same order.
Yeah.
and you get some slightly modified version of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably not as seriously as it is modified on the positive omega. And then they do not exactly match.
Then they do not exactly match, say, in fact, if you just take the next order calculation for the condo peak, for the inverse for the emission part, you get a very small peak at delta peak at negative energies. So there's, which is very unesthetic from the theoretical point of view. At that time, I can read what we wrote at the time. There we were mainly interested in explaining the experimental things, but let me see if I find that. For finite value of NF, equation 717 has a pole at slightly negative epsilon. There's a discontinuous connection between the valence photon emission and the Bis spectra. This unphysical result is due to a slightly inconsistent choice of basis states for the final and initial states. This inconsistency is not very aesthetic from a theoretical point of view and indicates problems one encounters in an attempt of a unified 1 over F expansion for both G bigger and G smaller. So if you look at, for example, Piers Coman's formulation of NCA, he does the calculation for the total spectral function. So you don't distinguish. Here it's kind of obvious, you see, because the weight here is a factor of n degeneracy larger than the weight here. This is obviously a problem when you let the NF go to infinity. In Piers Coman's calculation, you don't see it, but it turns out that if you look at the numerical solution, if you go to the condensate below 10 times the condo temperature, then you get some unphysical results. So in a sense, this Fermi liquid regime for very small energies is not 100% okay. But otherwise, let me see what next data has. Had some other did I have more? I had this defect with this nut, the thing not fitting. Okay, doesn't, or maybe it's here. Yeah, okay.
Can you comment more about the relative spectral weight of the two features? So you understand the lower part is 1 over NF with respect to the higher part.
Yeah. Let me, if you take the infinite U, the U finite again, so that which in the calculation later we did. So you will know that the integral from minus infinity to 0, the rho smaller, epsilon nu, the epsilon is NF divided by the degeneracy, because if you sum them all, this should give you the occupancy. So, and this is of order 1 over NF. And if you take the total spectral weight from 0 to infinity, rho nu bigger epsilon d epsilon, it's simply 1 minus NF divided by NF, and this is of order 1. So, and this kind of mismatch.
And that's because this large N unit is geared at handling small NF to be of order 1.
Yes.
Instead, and that's in strong contrast with slave boson approach, where small NF is taken to be of order NF itself, right?
Yeah.
That's the point.
That,
right? When you do slave boson calculation, small NF over big NF is taken of order 1. And then one takes the large N limit.
Yeah, but this is the second, say the third paper of Piers Coman, where he looks at this, so that you really have a saddle point expansion, and then he somewhere writes, this model is only a distant cousin of the original model. Yeah, but that's what he writes, and I know he writes.
The model is the same.
Yeah.
The larger limits.
But you treat the constraints differently.
Yes,
and with this different treatment of constraints, it's only a distant cousin of the original model.
But the only, The only thing which can be formulated as a saddle point is the other limit.
Only is the other limit, yeah, which is not the one you wanted.
Which is not what you described right now.
Which is not what the physics, what interest in physics is. Okay, so this I had, yeah, we can do this analytically. So there's a slight problem with the joining. Okay, this gives you maybe in a nutshell the essential ideas of this approach. We did this to higher orders, which then involves heavy computing. You have to invert very large matrices, and in the beginning we had programs. Our boss had programs, but Ulle is much more clever in doing computing. So in the end, he had the computer running, the program running for the very large calculations. We did this because we had experimental friends, say Jim Allen's group or Yves Baer's group, and say, why was the thing kind of successful? I think it was successful because we not only calculated the, say, valence photo emission and inverse valence photo emission, but we also looked at core spectra. So always when you have these type of microscopic Hamiltonians, the question is, where do your parameters come from? So then come maybe the LDA people, and we ask them to calculate the Hopping matrix elements. But it's a difficult problem, which probably will be addressed later during some time, or that was already discussed in this workshop, how to get microscopic parameters for these models. This is not what we did, but there were these experiments, say, for core level spectra, and there we fitted the F level position and the Hopping strings to get agreement with the core level spectra, and then had predictive power to say how the valence photo emission spectrum should look like. And Yves Baer told me that the one group was doing one experiment, and then the other were doing the calculations. And while they were doing the calculation, they were predicting what the next experiment should give, and it was very successful for many compounds. So this was a kind of a success story to explain a lot of the experiments. Later came people doing single crystals and questioned why should the impurity work so well. And then Arco made a point. And certainly, if you have a very clear, very good sample, then why not? Then rather you use the Anderson lattice model. Then the calculations are much more difficult. There's some people who tried a lot to do such type of calculations. And essentially, I've given many, many talks on the subject, but probably the last one in 1987. And so I'm kind of surprised that 15 years later, you again listen to me. Maybe then I'll finish here.
Maybe comment the question, why are you interested? Because I'm not sure that this is completely, or maybe I'm mistake that it's completely equivalent to NCA.
No, it's completely different from
it's NCA. Completely different. So we could use this method as a guide, okay, as a cutoff of our Hilbert space in exact organization scheme using dynamical mean field theory to produce periodical Anderson model.
But it's not really much different from NCA. You can, if you just look at the NCA and don't solve them self-consistently, but simply expand things and expand this. Here we do this really matrix inversion, but you don't do the matrix inversion, but simply expand again. Then the leading orders are all the same. There's a paper by Müller-Hartmann in 85 or so.
But there is a big difference if you take really the Kondo temperature very small with respect to the spectral weight in the two features.
Okay, let me ask a question. If one follows this method to the first, say, non-trivial order where you have a Kondo peak which is broad and not a delta function, okay, then if I look at the low frequency behavior of that condo peak, you are going to find some regular behavior. It has a smooth, small omega expansion. No, it's a constant minus omega squared. It's basically Lorentzian around the maximum.
It's Lorentzian around, the only problem is comes if I expand that.
So the problem is at finite frequency.
So there's no problem, so if this is delta, and then this is it's quite nice here, but I think that we have to join it somewhere here, and there's some slight inconsistencies here.
If I solve the NCA integral equation,
yeah,
the low frequency behavior is, of course, a constant in the density of states, but then the next correction is omega to some non-trivial exponent.
Yes.
So you have a non-analytic behavior of the spectral density.
Yeah, but say if we go to higher orders, then we'll get rather close agreement with the NCA and our calculation.
I see.
I mean, you compare different levels of 1/11 in a sense, because the NCA includes up to infinite order, very selective in class of diagrams, of course.
Yeah.
It goes up to infinite order.
Well, we went one order higher, so we went two orders higher, so that we were an order consistent in which goes beyond the NCA. So essentially, you.
Could you probably much more point the difference? So I'm not sure. Somebody says it's equivalent.
No, the point is that there's a paper by Müller Hartmann from 84 or 85 when he was a sabbatical in La Jolla, and he kind of simply expanded the NCA equation and to compare it with our approach. So certainly, if we go to a certain order, they agree up to the point where the order is correct, and then the NCA does some infinite summation, which is not really consistent, but it's an infinite summation. But we also have gone one order higher to get, say, better agreement, so that we get better agreement for ground state properties with the beta ansatz than, for example, some NCA type calculations.
But I'm not sure I understand. I mean, if I take the NCA equation, what should I do to, how should I expand them to recover this?
Rather simple.
Two things. You should distinguish probably between ground state properties and the spectra. For the ground state properties, I think it's sufficient, basically to do just the first iteration of the NCA set energies.
I'm interested in the spectra.
But for the spectra, I think that there are real processes that are not included in the NCA.
That's what I would say too. Yes.
So if we go a next higher order, we have processes which are not included in NCA. But on the other hand, the NCA includes resummations which are different from ours.
So they are not the same method.
There's one big difference. Here the peak comes about TK above 30, and that's any NF. At the end of the day, no matter what NF you put in, like if you put N equals to 2, just take the results that will drive with the notion of an infinite N.
It stays above.
Right.
But the point is that, say, to do the job, to have the condo peak at the chemical potential, you should go to the doubly degenerate case in symmetric situation. So then you really have to take double occupancy into account. If you do the type of theory as we do it that the leading orders in 1OF are correct, whereas say triple and higher orders are suppressed, then we can, for example, go to NF equal 2, but then we don't get the condo peak right at the Fermi level. But there's a rather simple trick to take another class of diagrams that you really succeed, and this is very similar to what Peter Wölfel with his T-matrix approach does with his
What I want to say is that even the ordinary NCA, although the peak gets distorted, it starts shifting towards the Fermi and gets distorted. But it develops something very close to Fermi. It's one blob that kind of starts shifting, broadening. In addition, part of it is shifting towards the fermion. So there are some, I mean, you know, you're dealing with something that is, I mean, it's twisted. So.
But again, my question is, what Euclidean mean question? Do when the generalist model non-symmetric, because the resonance is exactly at fermion level?
No, it's not exactly at the fermion level.
No, but I understand you said the same. Yeah. No, what's it say? Exact, or if you believe that what should be exact?
It depends on the occupancy. If the occupancy is one.
No. Unsymmetric, non-symmetric.
Well, there's some alternative basically there, right? I mean, it would be.
No.
In general, it would be shifted a bit from the.
But this is also delta. It's exponentially small.
No.
It's the border of quantum temperature.
Not the general problem, asymmetric, as long as the asymmetry is not tremendous, it's going to be shifted much smaller shift than the quantum temperature.
Are there numerical relation group calculations for the asymmetric case, and has this been really studied in all detail?
Yeah, I mean, nobody really looked at how much it's shifted, but if you do an RG calculation for the asymmetric, say, U infinity model, the contour resonance more or less sits at the Fermi level. Unless you blow it up and you see the shift.
On the level of your high energy peak, it sits at the Condor level.
I mean on the scale of decay. Uh-huh. I was talking on the scale of decay.
Okay. So the shift is much less than decay.
It's much less than decay. It's a fraction of decay.
But I think you can see that even from your thermal liquid picture.
Yeah.
If you kind of
I don't understand what I mean. There's only one scale in this problem, which is TK. So when you are saying much less than TK, it must be TK over pi. Not TK over pi squared.
No.
It's not some new scale.
Yeah.
No, but if you think of the Fidel symbol, it has the sign of the phase shift.
Answer my question. Is it TK over pi or is it some new scale?
Some new scale?
I don't believe any of that. I'm sure this is wrong. There is only one scale in that problem. The shift to the Fermi level is a order TK.
I'm sorry, it's related to TK, but
yes.
I wouldn't say the p-factor is pi, one over pi.
No, that was a joke, of course. I'm not claiming it's pi. I'm just saying there is no new scale. It's a fraction of TK.
But the fraction of the occupancy of the level. Right. I mean, it's going to be 1 minus the occupancy.
But if it's 1 minus the occupancy, there is a new scale. It's not TK.
So, I mean,
it's TK square over bandwidth.
It cannot be universal. If some rule tells you, at the Fermi level, some rule tells you,
so what is
the pi squared over the
But what is the answer to this question? I mean, this debate has been going on for 15 years.
So, let's think.